to decide that the things that I tried were in my life just to get high on. When I
said, hello and welcome everyone. Today is June 5th, 2007, and you are listening to the third installment of East Coast Bias. I am Jason Mish with my amigo Brendan Canny. How are you, Brendan?
Good. How are you, Jason?
Not bad. Not bad at all. We got a great show today for you, and let's get right into it. Now, on Friday, Billy Donovan accepted the head coaching job for the Orlando Magic, but by Monday, he won it out. And now him and the Magic are working on terminating the contract. So, Brendan, my question to you is Donovan making the right choice here?
I believe he is. After looking at the history of previous college coaches entering the NBA, Rick Pitino, Montgomery, Tim Floyd, none of them, I mean, you can say that Rick Pitino was the only one that really did that well, and even, but his record won't tell you that. I believe it was under 500, as was Montgomery's and Floyd's. I just see Donovan staying in Florida as the best thing for him. He's going to have the state. He's going to have the arena named after him soon. He's such a huge figure over there. I just think he's going to become a college lifer, much like Krzyzewski is at Duke.
I will disagree with you because of what Florida is in terms of college basketball. And it's a second-rate sport in Florida. College football is the main,
the main attraction. I definitely agree with you there.
And also, if you're looking at prestigious schools, and if he wants to be remembered as a prestigious coach, you know, the two national championships, you can't deny that. But it's not one of those top-notch schools like a Duke, a Kentucky, a UCLA, a North Carolina. You know, they hold such value that pretty much everything else is second level, and that's just how college basketball is. And also the point about the Magic, he's inheriting a guy named Dwight Howard who's not bad, and I think he's going to be a beast in this league if he's not already.
I agree.
And they're really only a couple players away from maybe really competing in a weak Eastern Conference.
Well, they already made the playoffs this past season. They just didn't have enough pieces to get out of the first round.
And in the Eastern Conference, you really don't need much.
No, that's true.
But also, I'll bring up your Pitino point. You brought up Rick Pitino, and he was one of those who struggled making the jump. He had a famous line at one of his press conferences where he kind of got pissed off. He said, Kevin McHale, Larry Bird, and Robert Parrish aren't walking through that door, kind of making fun of the fact that, you know, he doesn't have these players around him that maybe past coaches had had. But that's the same to say with Billy Donovan, because Noah Horford, Brewer, and Green aren't going to be walking through that door next year for him.
Yeah, that's true, but, I mean, Rick Pitino had over 400 games. That's at least four seasons that he was coaching the Celtics. He had Antoine Walker. He had Paul Pierce. There are drafts that he could have picked up players. There was free agency. So, I mean, he just didn't do what he should have done with those players and with the resources he had in Boston. Because Boston is, by and large, a basketball town. I wouldn't say that, I mean, with the previously when Pitino was there, it wasn't about the Red Sox. The Red Sox had the curse of the Bambino.
It's a basketball town because they've won so many championships.
Yeah, so
that's why.
And he had all the resources to make that into another contender, and he just couldn't do it. So I really think Billy Donovan is doing the right thing. He's doing the right thing as far as going back to school, but he's not doing the right thing by trying to get out of the contract that he signed with the Magic. I kind of think this is, I mean, it's not very honorable of him to do this. I believe that what he should have done is told the Magic to get out of his ear and tell them that he's going to go here back at home, or he was going to go back to the hotel, and tell him that he was going to go think about it there and talk to people and, you know, reach a decision on his own accord other than being pressured by the Orlando Magic management into signing the contract, which is what I ultimately think is what happened, where he just bullied into signing this contract.
Well, I don't think you can get bullied into $27 million, Brendan. But no. But I agree with you. My biggest problem with this is the flip-flopping. You know, agreeing on Friday, changing your mind Monday. You know, what do you really want? You know, it shows Florida. What's the perception to Florida, even? You know, you make the decision to leave, and now you want to come back.
I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think as soon as he gets back to the swamp, he's going to be... He's going to be welcome with open arms. I don't think... some people may have hard feelings. The majority are not going to have hard feelings. They just aren't.
The flip-flopping in the coaching world has happened before. We've had coaches flip-flop. As recent as April, where the head coach for Creighton basketball team, Dana Altman, accepted the Arkansas head coaching position and then turned it down one day later. And a more infamous case was Bill Belichick accepting the Jets job after Parcells stepped down, and then one day later he changed his mind. It was 3 days for Donovan, but still it makes him look like a hypocrite in my eyes. Mm-hmm. After in that press conference, you see him praising the Magic and the future that he thought he would have.
Yeah, I really thought it was going to be a nice marriage. Being from Florida, I was kind of excited about it. I mean, I'm a Philadelphia guy at heart. But I mean, it'd be nice to see Donovan go over to Orlando, which has been a struggling franchise ever since they let go of Shaquille O'Neal. They've let go of Tracy McGrady, and they've brought in guys like Grant Hill, who's been injured ever since he arrived here. And it was a nice little story for Florida, but unfortunately, it looks like he will be going back to Florida and continuing his college career there.
Well, we'll see what the Magic will do after this, and we'll see. What Donovan does with Florida again.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, sticking with coaches in the headlines, we move our attention to Sweet Lou Piniella. during a tirade in Saturday's game versus the Braves, following a close call at third, the Cubs manager kicked dirt on the third base umpire, landing him a 4-game suspension for his actions. Does this punishment fit the crime, Brendan?
I think it should have been more like 2 or 3.
You mean less then?
Yes, less than. I mean, all he did was kick dirt. Apparently, he made contact with the umpire, which I never saw in the like 1,000 times I was force fed the clip.
I agree with you. Yes.
So I really maybe 2 or 3. I don't see why it was going to be. I don't know why they made it a 4-game suspension. It was actually going to be originally set for 5. Until Piniella went to MLB Executive Vice President for Administration John McHale and talked to him, and he got his sentence reduced from 5 games to 4. I still don't think the punishment really fits the crime. I really think that he should have gotten 2 to 3 games for his little tirade, which really wasn't that big of a deal. And I agree with John Kruk, where he was saying on Baseball Tonight, where it's entertainment for these guys to do this.
Exactly.
Lou Piniella does this to entertain people, and he also did it to fire up his team. And for him to get a 4-game suspension for kicking dirt on an umpire is kind of ludicrous to me.
I agree with you that it doesn't fit the crime. I wouldn't have given him 4. I would have given him less, like you said. But I think what factors into it is Sweet Lou Piniella, and the joke is maybe we should call him Sour Lou.
Yeah.
But you know, he's had a history here of base throwing and, you know, arguing maliciously with umpires. So
yeah.
I think that's one of the things that factors into it. You know, he's been feisty in the past. When he was the manager of the Reds, he actually fought his closer, Rob Dibble, in the clubhouse after a game. So it kind of shows how he can have a temper.
Yeah. Well,
and the whole point behind it, sorry to interrupt you, Brent,
okay.
But is, you know, like you said, he's trying to motivate a subpar club, and they are 2-0 without Lou.
I was just about to say that they've won 2 straight under Alan Trammell. So maybe, you know, maybe this was a good thing that he did in order to get his team fired up.
I know it's hard for him to calm down about the situation because they're 24-31, they're third place in the NL Central. But they're only 6.5 out of the lead for the NL Central, and the Brewers have been struggling. And in such a horrible division, anyone can win that. So I would, you know, they're not out of it. They're not looking good, but they're not out of it.
No, but you would expect to have a team that spent $300 million in the offseason to be better than 500.
Definitely. You can't
especially
argue
with
that.
A manager like Lou Piniella. So, I just think they're just, right now, they're just a bunch of underachievers. And, I mean, signing Alfonso Soriano, although he's homered in the last three games, before that, I mean, he looked like he wasn't worth his contract, just like Barry Zito isn't worth his contract with the Giants. So, but getting into managers that have been suspended, what about Philip Wellman, the Braves AA manager, who had a major meltdown? And I use that word loosely because there's a bunch of adjectives you could use to describe what this guy did during his game with Chattanooga. I mean, this guy just totally went absolutely nuts.
And you know what? This, the Wellman thing, he's a manager for the Mississippi Braves, a double-A team. I think, I don't know if I'm alone in this opinion, but I think it's really a black eye for baseball. Because, please, can you tell me that that wasn't a completely staged performance and a guy just looking for attention?
I agree. I mean, when he did the commando crawl to the resin bag on the mound,
I mean, it's hilarious.
He used it as a hand grenade. It was great. It was great television. We were talking about being entertained. I was certainly entertained. But for him to only get a three-game suspension...
And Sweet Lou gets four,
yeah, I don't understand that. And it's a light punishment considering how conservative the Braves organization is. I mean, their GM is one of the oldest... Is the oldest in the major leagues. And the Braves are an organization which doesn't enjoy attention other than it, you know, winning the NL East year in and year out. So I didn't understand why he only got a three-game suspension.
I wonder actually who makes those decisions. But like you said, it was outrageous behavior.
And it was so outrageous, the clip has actually been viewed over 61,000 times on YouTube now.
Not hard to believe, because it was, you know, you don't see something to that magnitude. And the purpose of which he did that definitely came true, because he wanted that on SportsCenter. You know,
oh,
he wanted that on the news, and he definitely did his job there.
I totally agree. But let's switch gears a little bit. Let's start talking about the NFL and Roger Goodell's crusade against people with bad track records, starting with Tank Johnson, who was just suspended for 8 games by Roger Goodell, which can be reduced to 6 if he attends his counseling sessions and doesn't have any more run-ins with law enforcement. But this is kind of big news, considering that Chris Henry and Pac-Man Jones both will be serving more time than Johnson probably will be, and they haven't been convicted of anything yet. So what's your take on this?
You know, you like the fact that Goodell is trying to clean up the image of the NFL, and even, you know, we can even bring up Michael Vick in this too, with the Pac-Man and Chris Henry stuff. But I don't know, is this becoming a police league? I mean, that's kind of where I'm leaning with this, because the Tank Johnson thing, I don't know, 8 games, half the year, that's a lot. You know, he's going to lose $255,000.
Yeah,
this
but
year,
I mean, he's going to be, it's only going to be 6. More than likely.
That's true, more than likely.
More than likely, it's going to be a 6-game suspension. But I don't agree with the fact that it's a police league. I believe that Roger Goodell is saying, listen, we're going to get, you guys have had a million chances. Tagliabue didn't do anything. I warned you guys, and this is your punishment. I mean, I agree with everything he's done so far. I don't have any problem with Johnson getting a lesser sentence, because ever since he went to jail for those 60 days after he violated his probation, he's been a model citizen. He's done everything Roger has asked of him. He even made a 10-point plan by himself that included him surrounding himself with better people and becoming more responsible. So I think that the punishment fits the crime for Johnson, and I think if Pac-Man and Chris Henry would do something more along these lines, I think that they may have been able to have the chance to have a lesser suspension. But, you know, Adam Pac-Man Jones I mean, he went to a strip club the day before he met with Roger Goodell. When he was going to
go. Says a lot about Pac-Man, too.
It certainly does. And it means that he's not trying. So,
and with Tank, you know, I wouldn't take gun charges, like, lightly. And I think that's, you know, I agree with Goodell on that. And one of the instances I can think of was, I believe it was on New Year's last year, the cornerback for the Broncos, Durant Williams, was gunned down. And, you know, there was a lot of speculation behind should players be carrying guns for protection, the Steven Jackson thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that, kind of shooting into the air.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
It's a bad thing to have guns, and I think, you know, I'll agree on Goodell on that. It's just the image now is, though, it's I think it's more of the backlash from this is you keep seeing these eight-game suspensions, these guys who are continuously in the news in the NFL, the eight or nine players on the Bengals who have been arrested in the last year. So I don't know what the backlash to the NFL will be, but I agree with you. I think Goodell's made the right choice. Eight games is fair.
But, you know, Goodell is kind of riding a slippery slope. Not because I think he's picking on black athletes, but so far, all of them have been black athletes. Chris Henry, Pac-Man Jones, Michael Vick, and Tank Johnson are all African-American athletes, and some people are whispering around.
But that shouldn't.
No, it shouldn't, but it's always there. That.
You knew what I was going to say there. It shouldn't affect Goodell at all.
It shouldn't. But that issue of race will always be brought up if something like this happens. I don't agree with it. I think Roger Goodell is doing the right thing, and he's just picking on people who have been abusing their rights as NFL employees, because that's basically what they are. They're employed by the league. If they're not, well, if they don't sign a contract, I mean, they're not playing in the NFL. They're no longer employed anymore. So, if your employees are going to misbehave, then you gotta lay the smack down.
And like you said, Tank does seem remorseful about it, and he even told Goodell in an interview that he wants to be the man of the year, which is given to the best citizen in the NFL. And if I'm Tank, I don't count on that anytime soon, but, you know, at least it shows some remorse.
Certainly, it's certainly setting his goals pretty high, but, you know,
yes, it is.
At least he has goals, because it doesn't look like Chris Henry and Pac-Man Jones do. So, you know, God bless him. But let's switch gears again. Let's get into the NBA Finals. Cavaliers, San Antonio Spurs, Game 1's on Thursday, 9 o'clock, ABC. What is going to happen?
First off, we can talk a little about Game 6, you know, what led up to this. And again, you predicted it, the Daniel Gibson Show, 31, what was he, like 5 for 9 from 3?
He was 5 for 5. He went perfect from behind the arc.
And his My apologies for that.
Outburst. That's okay.
But and the story of LeBron, first half he takes two shots. And that just shows how he helped get the team involved.
Yeah.
I mean, it was remarkable for a guy like him to have two shots. The lowest before in a playoff game for him was 4. You know, it just showed that he didn't need them, and he was setting up his teammates. He had a double-double, almost a triple-double.
Yeah, almost another triple-double.
I mean, what do you take from the Pistons from that performance, though?
As far as the Pistons go, and we were talking about this before the podcast, I think that the Pistons are going to have to, they're going to have to blow up their nucleus. I think they're going to have to, get, you know, get younger instead of getting older.
Are you going to try to re-sign Billups if you're the Pistons?
No. You move Billups and you move Wallace. You build around Hamilton, and you build around Prince, and that's.
I firmly believe you cannot win with Rasheed Wallace on your team. Because that is the most sorry thing he ever did, getting that technical, when they were still in it.
Yeah,
it
they're still like in that game when he got teed up.
10-point game, and he gets the tees and gets out, and that was like the final nail in the coffin.
And what's even, what they brought up during the game, the guys who were calling it, was even if there was a Game 7, Rasheed would have been gone for Game 7 in Detroit because he had, I believe, what was it, 7 technical fouls and you're suspended a game?
Yep, that's the rule in the NBA.
Yeah, and he would have been, he would not have been able to play. So, you know, it's just him being a knucklehead again. Like, I can't believe that he did that because, like you said, they were still in that game at that point. Like, how can you do that to your team? This is supposed to be an experienced squad who don't make those kind of mistakes. And for him to do that was just, like, a total slap in the face, I think, to the rest of the players. And I would have shooed him off the court and just would have said, you know what, listen, that's it. We don't want you. And I would have been so animate with him, man. I'm losing my mind right now.
I completely agree with you. And now if we kind of look forward to if we're kind of previewing the NBA Finals, you know, a lot of the fact is that Bruce Bowen's a great defender.
You know, he's guarding.
Throw that out the window because that doesn't matter. LeBron's going to get his. You know, and I think it's more of a fact that it's going to come down to Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili. How do you feel about that?
My thing is that I think Bowen and LeBron is going to be something to watch. I wouldn't necessarily throw that out the window just because Bruce Bowen is going to foul him. Now, we've already seen that LeBron is kind of struggling from the free throw line. So if Bowen fouls him and puts him on the strike, LeBron's going to have to step up that part of his game and knock down his free throws.
It'll be interesting to see if it's going to be Game 5 LeBron or more of a Game 6 performance where he helped his teammates out completely.
Right,
you know,
and
setting them up.
And the thing is that he's going to have that kind of performance where he needs to shoot well in this series. If he doesn't shoot well, they lose. Because the Spurs are not the Pistons. You are going to get double digits out of Ginobili. You're going to get double digits out of Tony Parker. And you know you're going to get a double-double from Tim Duncan. So those are three guys that are going to produce every single night. And you couldn't say that about the Pistons in that series. Tayshaun Prince wasn't playing well. Rasheed Wallace didn't have good games. And even Chauncey Billups wasn't really stepping up as far as contributions go. So I think that LeBron is going to have to even step up to a higher plateau in this game than he did in the Pistons series.
The Cavs and Spurs have a little bit of history because of the fact that Mike Brown was an assistant coach under Greg Popovich when the Spurs won in 2003. So that'll be interesting to see. You know, that you can kind of think that they know what each other's game plans are going to be because I'm sure they're very similar. But it'll be interesting to see. And actually, we'll go right into now our little weekly segment we like to call Prognostications, Predictions, and Picks. And guess what we'll be talking about, Brennan?
Probably
the NBA
Finals.
Yeah. Yes. So who do you have and how many games?
Contrary to some of the research that I've done, I think the Cavaliers will take this in 7. I just think that LeBron is riding such a high, and he's doing everything right. I think I just have this feeling that LeBron is going to be able to pull this out for Cleveland, bring them their first NBA title. And I just think that he's going to have a fantastic, fantastic series. And like I said before, with the research that I found, since 83-84, the team with home court advantage in the NBA Finals is 17-6. The Spurs are rolling with a 12-4 playoff record this year. And the Spurs bring a combined 103 games of NBA Finals experience into the series, while the Cavaliers only have one player that has any Finals experience, and that player is Eric Snow, who was on the 1996
Correct.
Sonics and the 2001 76ers, and that's only 11 games. But, like I said, I'm sticking with the Cavs.
I'm going to be like every other major sports analyst out there, and I will side with the Spurs. It's going to be a tough series. It's going to be close. My heart's with Cleveland, and I think America's heart's with Cleveland after the Game 5 and Game 6 performances. But for the Cavs to have a shot, they're going to need to split in San Antonio. Now, remember, in the finals, it's a 2-3-2 format. So if they get that split, they get three games in Cleveland, you never know. You know, it could be anyone's game, but I definitely think we're going to have a good NBA Finals.
Oh, definitely. And Game 1 is huge in the NBA Finals because whoever wins that first game historically wins a series 71% of the time. And all time, the record is 43-17 for that team that wins Game 1 of the NBA Finals. So Game 1 is going to be pretty big. Even though it's only going to put that team up by one game, it's pretty much going to tell... It's pretty much going to tell the story of the rest of the NBA Finals.
Game 1 of the NBA Finals is on Thursday, and our next broadcast will be on Friday, so we will have a complete recap of that game. And that is our show for this Monday and Tuesday, actually. I'm sorry.
Tuesday, yeah.
And, Brandon, would you like to add anything?
No, I wouldn't. I'm not going to add anything. Like Jason said, we're going to have a complete rundown of the Spurs and the Cavaliers from their Thursday game. We'll bring you guys some updated news, if there is any, regarding Billy Donovan. And hopefully we can start kicking around some ideas like we were talking about with the Pistons, what they should do as far as Billups and Rashid, who both are going to be free agents, because it's going to be huge news what happens to those guys, because if those guys both leave, I mean, the Pistons won't be seeing the Eastern Conference Finals again for a very long time.
Well, it was a great show. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you again Friday.
Even with the cover of another perfect wonder where it's sold.